Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Paul Lawrence, a partner at PricewaterhouseCoopers, and today's conversation is with Amy Comstock, Director of the Office of Government Ethics. Well, Amy, in the first segment, you mentioned a couple things that I'd probably want to make sure I have a complete understanding of, and that's conflict of interest and disclosure. Could you spend a minute telling me, making sure I got the right definitions of this?
Absolutely. A conflict of interest in the government sense means that a government official may have worked, or a conflict would be where a government official works on a matter or participates in an issue, if you will, where they also have a personal financial interest. So this criminal statute at issue and then the regulations are actually written in a prophylactic way. They prohibit federal officials from working on any matter in which they have a financial interest. An easy example of this would be if I have $50,000 worth of stock in a particular company that would be affected by a decision I make as a government official, because the decision would affect that segment of an industry. For an example, the easiest one is companies that make tires, and I'm working on a regulation that might affect the tire industry, and I, in fact, own $50,000 of stock in a company that makes tires. I, under these rules, cannot participate in any decisions that would affect the finances of the tire companies. What's interesting about these statutes is, as I said, they're prophylactic. They keep people from having to decide, am I doing the right thing? Am I sure I'm not making a decision just because I own stock in the company? Or, in fact, what they do is prohibit the employee from participating at all. They keep the federal employee from having to do the right thing or struggle to do the right thing. That is the easiest example. There are a couple possible resolutions, because, in fact, if we step back and look at all the different kinds of people who come in to the federal government, either as career servants who will be there long term or during the change of administration, as we've just seen, people have all different kinds of investments, and they come in with all sorts of assets that they own. What we do is, through a process of financial disclosure, we review someone's holdings and assets to determine if we think they will have a conflict of interest. We have something called a public financial disclosure form, which is filled out by all presidential nominees, and then once a year by the 20,000 top government executives, federal government executives. That form discloses all assets someone owns, financial transactions they've had in the last year, any outside positions they may hold, gifts they've received not for nominees, but beyond that, gifts someone's received. We review those forms to determine if there are any conflicts, or potentially will be any conflicts. If a conflict, again, the tire industry example, if a conflict is found to be at issue, the possible resolutions are that someone divests themselves of the holding. In that case, I would sell my tire company stock. Or I agree to recuse, meaning I agree to not participate in the tire company decision. Or another common resolution is a waiver. Ethics officials throughout the federal government have the authority, if they review a number of factors that have to be taken very seriously, they have the authority to determine that, given all the factors and looking at exactly how much stock this person owns and what the government question at issue is, they've waived the conflict and they've determined the person can participate in it. The example I gave, that might not be a good candidate for a waiver, because that seems to be a pretty clean conflict and pretty clear conflict, and it's a liquid holding, something I really could divest. When I referred to public financial disclosure forms, this is an important aspect of our program. The mission behind the Office of Government Ethics is not just for us to assess conflicts of interest, or for ethics officials throughout the executive branch to assess conflicts of interest. It's also to ensure that the public has the ability to assess the integrity of government decision making on its own. So for those 20,000 executive branch employees who file financial disclosure forms every year, they are available to the public for the public to view themselves. They are viewed. they're requested quite regularly by the media, and are used to determine whether there might be questions behind a public official's decision making.
What are some of the management challenges that OG faced in the most recent presidential election?
Well, in terms of the most recent presidential election, we did, because we review for every presidential nominee, Senate-confirmed nominee, the financial disclosure forms to determine if there will be any conflicts of interest. Quite frankly, the extended election did mean that we began that process a little bit later than we expected to. But I have to say that the staff at OGE and the agencies in the White House have worked very hard, so we feel that we are caught up in that. So that was just a, some late nights in the spring when we expected to have the late nights in late winter. But in terms of the management challenges that I think I've seen at OGE since I started in November, and actually in the years that I've been working at Ethics, one issue that I struggle with is honestly the name of our agency. We are, of course, the Office of Government Ethics. And I have had many conversations with people who feel that we have, therefore, usurped what you and I might consider to be ethical decision making. Our office does issue a code of conduct that all federal employees are expected to abide by. We have conflict of interest regulations. We have post-employment regulations that everyone, based on statutes, that everyone is expected to abide by. But it was never intended that the codes of conduct that we have would usurp individual employees and executives' personal decision-making. I am a strong proponent of ethical decision-making and values-based decision-making by all executives. And I would always challenge everyone that the code of conduct is not the last place to, is not the last stop for your own decision-making as a government executive. We establish minimal standards for behavior. But if something, one must always bring their own values, their own judgment to any decision that they make. If something feels wrong, you need to pursue it. If one of our rules tells you that something is wrong and you firmly disagree with it, you need to call me. Government executives, I firmly believe and will always encourage, still need to bring their own years of experience and judgment to any issue they consider to be ethical. Now, if it's an ethical question, if it's clearly covered by our rules, we need to talk about that and have that conversation with someone in my office or with an ethics official, but never think that our office has usurped individual ethics decision-making values, or if you will.
Are there any challenges around the disclosure form? The example you gave of the tire company and the stock and that kind of decision seemed clear, but I'm wondering about the sort of blurring of companies and services and the internet and how even to unravel that in a possible...
It's getting harder. I think you've hit on a real point that we struggle with. Investments are getting more complicated. Companies are getting more complicated in terms of parent companies and subs. We'll discuss in a little bit some legislation that we've sent up to the Congress just this summer to try and streamline the financial disclosure process. But one of the components of that legislation is a new provision to help us deal with limited partnerships, for example. 10 years ago, most often, even for very wealthy individuals, assets tended to be just straight equity stock holdings. Many, many people now have limited partnerships where they hold something that then holds another partnership. It's much more complicated to even figure out, believe it or not, what someone actually owns. And if you buy some share of a limited partnership, you don't even always know exactly what you own. You may know what industry it is. So that is becoming more of a struggle. We're trying to achieve that perfect balance between not putting so much burden on an employee that it's hundreds of hours work to fill out the financial disclosure form. But quite frankly, the public still absolutely, under our system, and I believe it, has a right to know what this person owns and where their interests are. Remember, and this is an important concept we always have to keep in mind in our office, our government is basically designed to turn over at the highest levels every 4 to 8 years. So we do have a constant churning of new people coming into the government. And we're trying to ensure that our system of disclosure is not so burdensome that without need, without unnecessarily, that it deters people, that it's such a struggle in and of itself to do these forms that it deters people from wanting to come into government. I don't think we've ever reached that point, but there, in the last few years, there have been some complaints that were close.
That's a good place for us to stop for a break. We'll come back. We'll ask Amy Comstock of the Office of Government Ethics more about how the ethics programs work. This is the Business of Government Hour.